I'm Rod Hill, FM News.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In
exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Look, if you hate cops just because they're cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to take your phone calls and emails. I got to start out with this, though. And we've talked about some of this before, but there's brand new information. Doctors in America right now are making billions of dollars, literally billions of dollars, about $2 billion 2 years ago, about $3 billion last year. They are forecast to make about $5 billion by next year in the name of mutilation of children, in the name of transgender affirmation. I know they like to use terms like transgender affirmation because it sounds a whole lot better than chemical castration or double mastectomies. And now we're finding out there are new indications of two things, and I'll back these up and I'll cite my sources. Number one, the science behind all of this nonsense is absolutely weak. And number two, there's a study out of the Netherlands that says 9 out of 10 kids who claim that they are confused about their gender will, to use a layperson's terms, grow out of it. Let me get to both of those, and I plan to back both of them up. But first, oh, and I do want to mention this. Yeah, there's got to be the fact that somebody's got to start asking this question of the University of Washington and OHSU gender clinics, because they're making huge amounts of money. They're doing this stuff. They admit themselves on the record that they're still trying to figure it out. Somebody needs to pose that question. We have called both OHSU and UW multiple times. They will not talk. So somebody's got to make them talk at this point and explain, why are you doing this to kids when you don't have the science behind it? But welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Wednesday. I'm glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, especially on this, I'd be glad to put you right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. We've got a brand new question every single day on the X poll. Today's X poll, should America exempt black citizens from paying income taxes as a form of reparations? It is a proposal of a brand new member of Congress from Texas by the name of Jasmine Crockett, who is herself a black American. And she says maybe what we should do, she's actually calling for black Americans to be exempt from paying taxes as a form of reparations. We'll get into the details of that as well, because she actually realized that part of her own proposal is a big goof. But find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. You can send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. But to back up what I was saying, number one, the newest studies, the latest information say the folks who are doing this to children, not just in the United States, but around the world, and especially in the developed countries like Great Britain and the United States. Well, in Great Britain, an independent review of gender-related medical care for minors that was submitted yesterday to the UK's National Health Service. They have nationalized medicine, so, or nationalized health insurance in any case. They found that previous studies on the topic are of poor quality, and there is very limited evidence on the long-term outcomes. Well, that's saying it mildly. They also point out, and I want to read this quote, this is an area of remarkably weak evidence, and yet studies, results of studies, are exaggerated and misrepresented by people on both sides of the debate to support their point of view. The reality is we have no good evidence on the long-term outcomes of interventions to manage gender-related distress. In other words, a kid who says, I was born a boy, but I really feel like I'm a girl inside. Or I was born a girl, and I really think that I identify more as male. I understand about gender identity. Frankly, I don't care what pronoun you use. I don't care what kind of underwear you wear. I don't care how you present yourself to the rest of the world. But when we license doctors and we license healthcare institutions, and then we say, we're going to let those people who used to take a Hippocratic oath that said, first do no harm. And when they start using chemicals to permanently change children, children who aren't old enough to make their own decisions, then we have to get involved. The NHS England commissioned an independent review of gender identity services for children and young people. They did that 4 years ago. It's called the CAS report or the CAS review. It indicates the number of children and young people who've shown up at the NHS. Believe it or not, they have a whole department of this called the Gender Identity Service, has increased dramatically since 2009, increased exponentially in 2014. You say, what does that mean? Those are math terms. Okay, let me tell you how. In 2009, there were 15 girls who were reported to the Gender Identity Service to get them help. Today, the number is 1,071. It went from 15 girls to more than 1,000. And those are female, the number of female children went from 2 in 2009 to 138. It went up 65-fold. The number of adolescent males went from 24 to 426. And the number of male children went from 10 to 131. Prior to 2009, Great Britain's Gender Identity Service only saw 50 kids a year. Today, that number is dramatically higher. And now they're admitting, gosh, it turns out we don't have much science to back all this stuff up, but they're doing it to kids, and it's having permanent effects on the kids. The second data point, because I promised I'd back up both of them. The majority of gender-confused children grow out of that feeling by the time they are adults. They did a long-term study. It was done in the Netherlands. It tracked 2,700 children from age 11 to their mid-20s. So we're talking about a large group of kids. We're talking about a long period of time of more than a decade. And what did they find out? 1 in 10 children expressed gender non-contentedness, meaning they weren't happy with what gender they were born with. But by age 25, there was the number had dropped to 1 in 25, or about 4%. That said they often or sometimes were unhappy with their gender. And here's what the researchers concluded. The results of the current study might help adolescents realize it's normal to have some doubts about one's identity and even gender identity during this age period, and it's also relatively common, and you will grow out of it. Now, you can say, I disagree with it. Fine, tell me why. Tell me if you think kids won't grow out of it, and tell me you think it's sensible to say, we're going to take kids who are confused about their gender, who might have a very good chance of simply growing out of it, because that's what the studies are showing. But instead, we're going to chemically neuter them. We're going to stop puberty. We may do surgery. And in fact, they are doing both surgery and gender treatment on kids. Kids who aren't old enough, as society has judged, to make any serious decision about their lives, where they live, whether they can drive, get a tattoo, get a body piercing, suntan at a suntanning booth. They can't decide to join the military till they're 18 and adults. They are doing this to kids, and the doctors are making big bucks, and those doctors need to explain. Do you have science behind this? And if you don't, how do you justify what you're doing? Glad to be with you. Always glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Coming up, the Radio Northwest nonsense is coming up next. And new evidence that Washington State's court system is the best one Democrat Party dollars.
Lars has welcomed naysayers for 27 years, but occasionally...
Who is this person who speaks to me as though I needed his advice?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
We have new evidence that Washington State has the best court system the Democrat Party dollars can buy. 2 years ago, Democrats in the state legislature passed an unconstitutional ban on so-called high-capacity magazines. Now, if you're not familiar with the Second Amendment, I'll be glad to explain what magazines are. This week, a judge, after hearing arguments from both sides, ruled the law violates both the state and the federal constitutions. That seems clear enough to me. Democrat Attorney General and wannabe Governor Bob Ferguson quickly launched an emergency appeal to the state Supreme Court. And 88 minutes later, that unconstitutional law was right back there on the books. It wasn't restored by the very partisan Washington Supreme Court. Now we had to find out the detail. An unelected court commissioner, a bureaucrat, did the deed. It didn't come after a trip to the Court of Appeals, as the law requires. It didn't come after filing briefs or oral arguments. Democrats don't need no stinking due process, do they? We don't even know if Supreme Court justices on the Washington court even knew what happened or read the case before they decided it. I suspect they did not. But they do know who signs the checks that fund their campaigns, and they do what their Democrat Party employers expect. It makes you kind of wonder, if judges who enforce the rules on the rest of us do not have to follow the rules, why should any of us? Our question of the day, why do the rats keep fleeing from the Governor Tina Kotek's ship of state? Well, another one has left the boat. It turns out that one of her top staffers, the fourth staffer to leave the executive office of Oregon governor in the last few weeks, Deputy General Counsel, that means she's an attorney, Lindsay Burrows. She has left and said she's going to go out and defend criminals for a living. Well, I had the thought that doesn't she find there are enough criminals in Salem that she could defend right now? Or did Shamia Fagan's departure and crooked Val Hoyle's election to the big house, Congress, and the demise of LaMotta and FTX, both cash baggers, did that thin the herd too much? And why is it that all of these people are living? Consider what's happened in the last 2 weeks. Kotek's chief of staff resigned and quit over Kotek bringing her wife to work. Two of Kotek's top aides resigned at the same time. Details came out that Kotek's wife had conflicts with her staff and her private office. Two ethics complaints were filed. Kotek requests ethics guidance, but the Ethics Commission says, we're too busy looking at these complaints against you to give you any guidance on whether or not you can create a gig in the governor's office for your wife. And resigned chief of staff gets an 8-month job at the administrative department. In other words, when her chief of staff quit, well, she kind of quit. She got a replacement job. They created a job for her at Department of Administrative Services, $300,000 a year. Now, that's a nice replacement job. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe you're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
I want to give today's Daily Grill to the United States Postal Service, which announced yesterday that they're planning a rate hike. The rate hike will go up about 8%. It will happen this summer. The cost of a first-class stamp will go from 68 cents to 73 cents. And the Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy, has said, you better get used to it. You're going to have some uncomfortable rate hikes as the Postal Service seeks to become self-sufficient. In other words, their goal is break even. You want to consider what happened last year? Last year, the Postal Service brought in about $78 billion, and they still lost money. They lost $6.5 billion. They have lost money, and they have not, in fact, even broken even one single year since they became independents in 1968. It's unbelievable. Our best email of the day, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Warren Knight writes in, Lars, will hapless Ted Wheeler, mayor of Portland, has lost another downtown tenant. Buffalo Wild Wings is closing, but this time they're calling it like it is. Management is not making a feeble excuse like high water bills or lost our lease or anything like that. Nope. They said that crime and drug use in the downtown area has led to their decision to close up Buffalo Wild Wings in downtown Portland. Way to go, Ted. If you keep this up, there won't be anybody left except the criminals and the druggies. But then again, it looks like you just continue doing your same stupid management decision, signed Warren Knight. To your calls at 866-HEY-LARS, and let's start the day the right way with a naysayer. Hey, Chuck, welcome to the program. You know we love naysayers. So what do you and I disagree about today?
Well, everything, for starters. But
everything.
Okay. Do one thing at a time. First, do you know what party that the Honorable Judge Gary Basher belongs to in Cowles County that ruled on this thing?
I don't. Because judges don't run for partisan positions, as I understand the election system.
Oh, but you were talking about Democratic-controlled courts and all that. Okay, so that's one thing. Yeah.
Well, what is the one thing you're pointing out? Is he a Republican, a Democrat, or an independent, or unaffiliated? Do you know?
I'll let you and your people do your research on that, but I know.
Well, I don't care. I mean, what I do know is that all the U.S., the Washington State Supreme Court is made up exclusively of Democrats. They get more than 90% of their campaign contributions from Democrats, and I think it twists their point of view. Do you think that any Supreme Court could make a decision on the constitutionality of a law in 88 minutes?
The answer is no.
Okay, but they did anyway.
Right, they were doing that off of what they...
Do you think the lower court judge was wrong in his assessment that the ban on magazines is unconstitutional? Because I think he was right on the law and the Constitution. Do you think he was wrong?
I think the Honorable Gary Basher was correct.
What we're saying is he makes a decision, says that law is imposing an unconstitutional requirement on the people of Washington State, and he puts the law on hold. And the very partisan Washington Supreme Court, in 88 minutes, probably without even reading the decision, says, nope, we're gonna subvert that. We're going to head that off.
They've already made this decision when they decided to pass the law in the first place.
No, passing a law does not make it constitutional. You could put slavery on the ballot in Oregon, Washington. It doesn't make it constitutional, right?
Okay. Next, I got to move right along.
You're going to give up on that one. Okay, good.
What do you care if other people's kids want to cut off their schmeckle, okay?
I think I care? I care about any harm that comes to anybody, frankly, and especially children. Do you care about whether or not kids are? Do you care about whether or not kids are mutilated, Chuck?
Actually, I don't. I think that your fairy tale is just some right wing nonsense. In fact,
no. Tell me, they are mutilating kids at the University of Washington.
Northwest nonsense.
They're mutilating kids at UW and OHSU. Are you in favor of that?
You know what? You should change the name of your show to Northwest Nonsense, okay? That's what I think.
Okay, I'll change. But other than that, will you answer my question? Is mutilating kids something you favor? Because it sounds like you do. In any case, I love a good naysayer, and Chuck was a good naysayer. If we had a T-shirt to send him, I was a naysayer on the Lars Larson Show, and all I got was this stupid T-shirt. You got the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Sometimes the listeners say it best.
Hey, Lars, love your show, and I really appreciate what you do. Boy, you cover more territory in an afternoon than a lonely badger in springtime.
Who's next? This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's Wednesday. It's the Radio Northwest Network serving the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. Our poll on X today, should America exempt black citizens from paying income taxes as a form of reparations? The idea comes from a young freshman congresswoman, Jasmine Crockett of Texas, and she says black Americans should be exempt from paying taxes as a form of reparations. Now, back here in the Pacific Northwest, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter Nigel Jaques joins me now. He writes at WWeek.com, Willamette Week, and this is a strange story about this piece of riverfront that has been clean and yet nothing happened to it for the last 20 years. Nigel, welcome back, and tell us what's going on with this piece of property and why it's so significant.
It's called the McCormick and Baxter site. It's just upstream of a railroad bridge that crosses the Willamette River in St. John's. It's right below the bluff on which the University of Portland sits. It's about 40 acres of upland and about 17 acres in the water. It was incredibly dirty because there was a creosoting plant there from 1944 to 1991. They basically brought logs in and dipped them in creosote, which makes them waterproof and keeps bugs from getting involved. So for, you know, decades, they were basically dumping this the waste creosote into the river, and then later they were dumping it onto the ground there. So 1991, thereabouts, the company goes bankrupt. The ground is incredibly polluted, so the federal EPA and state DEQ step in under what's called an orphan program. Because the company was bankrupt and had no money, it couldn't clean the property up. So the state and the feds spent $70 million to clean it up. A lot of that meant hauling the mess away and capping a lot of it because it couldn't be taken away, or they didn't have enough money to take it all away. So it's been clean enough for you and me to have a picnic there or play frisbee. It's been clean enough for public use since 2006, but it has sat vacant for these 19 years.
I mean, could they build something on it? I mean, because ordinarily waterfront property and property on the top of hills is the most expensive property anywhere in the world, isn't it?
DEQ tells me probably couldn't build housing, couldn't build senior housing, but could use it for, you know, you could use it for a variety of different uses.
Industrial, maybe? Light industrial?
Possibly industrial, yeah. The catch is that the former CEO of McCormick & Baxter retains kind of the right of negotiation. The company doesn't exist anymore, and it owes DEQ and EPA far more than the land is worth, but it stayed in the ownership of the company. So Charlie McCormick gets to negotiate with potential buyers. For a long time, he tried to sell at the University of Portland, which is right above, ended up buying a piece of land right next to it. Other buyers are now starting to get interested. There's a lot of interest in sort of using it for open space or habitat for, you know, for birds and for fish and for animals. But it's kind of a rare success story in that most of the Portland Harbor, which is a Superfund site, has not been cleaned up, even though it's been a Superfund site since 2000. So rare success story here, except the success only goes so far.
Nigel, here's the part I don't get. And you know, I'm the last guy who's going to say the government should own more land. But if the taxpayers paid to clean up this land, how did the company or one individual end up retaining any rights to the land at all? I mean, I would assume that if you don't do the cleanup, you've got liens against you or against the property that are so big that the government effectively ends up owning it. Why? How did the government manage to spend $70 million of our dollars and not end up owning the cleaned up land?
There are some technicalities within the funding of the Superfund, the whole Superfund program, very expensive, very legally technical. So the state has effective control. They can say no to any deal Charlie McCormick might agree to, but they don't want to own it for, in essence, kind of liability reasons, even though they will retain the long-term liability on the site. It's also very
hold on. We spent $70 million, and if anything bad happens on the site because of the pollution, we're on the hook, but we don't own
Correct.
The property. That sounds like the
Correct.
Kind of deal that only the government could come up with, where we lose every way.
We do lose every way, and that's because there's no money, there's no private money left, and there's no insurance coverage left. It's all been exhausted. So eventually, and I think sooner rather than later, the state and the feds are going to force Charlie McCormick to sell this to somebody. It should be Metro, in my opinion, just because Metro's sitting on a ton of money from the last parks bond that they floated specifically to buy open spaces, and they already own the land next door at Willamette Cove. But it might be, you know, it might be a nonprofit that says, okay, we'll make this.
Don't give it to Metro. That is, and by the way, I wanted to ask you about Metro because I didn't play it today. Maybe I'll play it tomorrow. You did a brilliant interview, and I got to frame this up, and you'll tell me where I'm wrong. So you've got Metro, this ridiculous extra layer of government, in my view. And they you can't even figure out what they do. They run the landfill, or they run the tipping operation for the garbage trucks. They run the zoo, and they suck money out of that. And then they go out and they sell the taxpayers and say, hey, we need two-thirds of $1 billion for housing. And somehow they've committed all the money, except I can't see the results of what they got for two-thirds of $1 billion. And then you say, well, what are you going to do next? Have you solved the housing problems of the region? And the answer is, no, we haven't solved the housing problems, but we're going to put animals at the zoo and their housing ahead of the housing of human beings. That's what you managed to drill out of one of the Metro councilors who showed up for an interview. And Nigel, I have to warn you, that may be the last interview you get. Most of my interviews that go that way, you don't get another one, but you got her to admit, yeah, we're going to put animals ahead of humans. She didn't want to say it. She said she didn't look at it that way, but I thought it was freaking brilliant. How do they justify saying we took two-thirds of $1 billion, we can't show you what we did with it, but it's all committed, meaning it's all spent ahead of time, and we're going to ask for another $300 or $400 million, and we're going to spend that on housing animals at the zoo, who I don't know if they're in any danger of, you know, dying because of lack of housing right now. And we're going to ignore the housing problem that this woman said was her top priority. Fill my audience in, would you please?
Yeah, so Metro is asking for $380 million on the May ballot. It's a little bit undefined. They say they've got some infrastructure problems at the zoo. They'd like to expand some of the exhibition spaces, but they really didn't make a very convincing case for why they need the money. They are now in the housing business. We all know there's a humanitarian disaster on the streets. There are thousands of people who are sleeping outside every night. And, you know, our discussion with them was really about priorities. I think almost everybody would agree that we have asked taxpayers to shoulder a very heavy burden in this community. And so I guess our position at the paper is, if you're going to ask for new tax money, we really better need that money. And you also better have prioritized all the responsibilities that you have. And so I just was asking the Metro Councilor whether they had thought through their priorities, because it wasn't clear that they had, and also whether they were sure that they really needed more money for the zoo at this time, because, again, I mean, the zoo is able to sell tickets, it sells merchandise, it's got plenty of revenue streams that don't involve asking taxpayers for more money. So we... I would encourage voters to think about those questions before they fill out their ballot in May. We were certainly trying to get Metro to focus on those answers last week.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll encourage people to vote no and send Metro a message, because that woman sat right there and told you, Nigel, housing is my number one priority. It's what I ran on. But now I'm more concerned about housing animals than I am about housing humans. And boy, did you nail it down. We'll put up a link on my website so people can watch the interview. It's absolutely brilliant. That is the Pulitzer Prize winning reporter Nigel Jaquas from WWeek.com. In a moment, I'll get to your phone calls and emails. And can you imagine this? Being told your disabled son can't live in a big trailer, a fifth wheel, parked on your own property. We'll get to that next.
Sleepy Joe was on Jeopardy.
This man, also known as the worst president in United States history, loves ice cream, lounging on beaches, and sniffing children. Joe.
Who is me? Wait, where am I?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. I want to share this with you first, and then I'll get to emails. And by the way, this segment comes from 540training.com. Concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense online at 540training.com. And I was telling one of my producers, Joel in this case, that, I don't know, 25 years ago, I remember a subject came up out of Springfield, because we got a great affiliate there in Eugene, KPNW. And a woman or a man had called me up and said, look, the city is down. They're coming down on me like a ton of bricks. And I said, what are they doing to you? And she said, well, my brother-in-law or brother is out of work. and he doesn't have a place to live. And we have our camp trailer parked in our front driveways, like 24-foot camp trailer, nice camp trailer. And she said we have it plugged in and connected to water just so it makes it convenient to get it ready to go camping. And so I told my brother or brother-in-law that he could live in there. And all of a sudden, there's a complaint. And the city of Springfield comes by and says, you can't live in that camp trailer. Why not? It's parked on my driveway. It's parked in front of my house. It's been there. It's sitting there empty most of the time. There's a guy sleeping in it every night. What's the big deal? And that was long before today's era of zombie RVs parked down streets. I mean, you can't go. Tina and I have been in the last 12 months or so. We've been to Spokane. We've been to Tri-Cities. We've been to Seattle, Tacoma. We've been to Portland, Eugene, Bend, other places usually related to work, but sometimes on the weekends. There isn't a city out there that doesn't have this problem. So you have massive numbers, thousands of people who will pull up their RV, oftentimes barely functioning, park it on a public street and leave it there for months, and they're allowed to do it. But God forbid you should do it on your own property. So Coin TV did this story about a woman named Virgie Williams. And Virgie Williams has a disabled son. And he has been living in this trailer. It looks like a big fifth wheel. It's a decent-sized trailer on her property for the past 5 years. And now the city of Portland has come after her and said, we're going to fine you hundreds and hundreds of dollars every single month if you don't kick your son out. And they say to her, well, you have to have him either move into the house with you or he's got to leave. He can't live in the trailer. And apparently he's waiting. He's getting prepped for heart surgery in June, their oldest son who's living in the trailer. And this woman is 72 years old. She has Social Security and a small pension. She can't afford the fines. And she said, I can't have them move into my house. My house is 900 square feet, and we've already got other family members who are living in the house. She's living in a 900-square-foot house, and the camp the trailer, not a camp trailer, this is a big, nice trailer, is parked on her property. But somebody in her neighborhood has complained about it. And just down the street from this Virgie Williams, there are lines and lines and lines of zombie RVs that the city is doing exactly nothing about, because that's on city property. So the city will allow people to park these RVs and trailers and everything else for extended periods of time on property that we own, public property, but they won't let this woman use her private property to house her disabled son. That makes no sense whatsoever. Let's go to the phones now at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Kenneth, thanks for the call from Clinton, Washington. What's on your mind?
Well, the lady who says that reparations should not have to be paid if the black people just do not have to pay taxes. Well, who's yep. to say then that my friend Mort, who is black, wants to give me 3 pints of blood over a year and I transition? Then all of a sudden, there you go. Now I don't have to pay taxes.
You know, these days, Kenneth, I don't even think you need the blood. You just need to say, I identify as black, and all of a sudden the entire population of the United States could be out from under income taxation, couldn't we?
Well, yeah, but didn't that happen with that babe from Montana and then with the Spokane?
Oh, Rachel Dolezal, the white woman who managed to pass herself off as black, even becoming the head of the NAACP for a period of time. And she convinced everybody, not her family, not the people who knew her well. They said she's a faker. But yeah, you're right. She managed to pass that off very, very quickly. Let's go to Linda and Ben. Hey, Linda, welcome to the Lars Larson Show on this Wednesday. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. Well, amongst the fact that you're just the greatest, I want to give a tip to what I had the same situation. A friend parked his trailer. I have low blood pressure, and so I fainted. I talked to my doctor and said, what can I do? I really would like to have my friend here in case I go down. And she said, well, let's just write a letter. So she wrote a letter of my medical situation.
Wow.
Which was tenuous. And with that letter, they, in here in Bend at least, allow me to have his very nice trailer here. And when I don't answer the phone, he either comes looking for me or he calls another number.
That's a brilliant workaround, because then you're covered under the ADA, aren't you?
And what's the ADA?
Americans with Disabilities Act. I would guess that's probably the workaround. You say, I have this disability. I may faint. I may be in medical distress. I've got a friend who's willing to take care of me, but he has to be nearby, so I let him park his trailer on my property. That's brilliant.
Exactly. Well, pass that on to people. Get their doctor's advice. Because I was just cheating until the neighbor took a picture and sent it in, and the feds came after me, and I said, oh, I have this letter.
Isn't that nice when your neighbors decide that they can tell you what to do with your property using the cudgel that is government? Yeah, that's why WEF, the World Economic Forum, says someday you will own nothing and you will be happy. And to hell with them. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Look, if you hate cops just because of the cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Wednesday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and it's my pleasure to be with you. And I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. We'll do that in just a minute. But there are a couple of things I really don't like. I don't like censorship. I don't like being told that I can't say what I want to say as long as it's accurate. I also don't like seeing other people told that either. On the other hand, I don't like unfair or untrue attacks being made on politicians. Now, I don't have a particular dog in the fight when it comes to David Brock Smith. David Brock Smith is serving as a senator in the state legislature. He's running again, and he's got an opponent. And two of his opponent's friends have gone after him. We talked to one of them, Rob Taylor, the other day. Ben Edel joins me now, who is also a candidate for a different legislative district, but he is one of two people who got a cease and desist letter from the attorneys working for David Brock Smith saying, you can't say stuff about our guy that is untrue. So I thought we'd give Ben a chance to tell his side of the story. Hey, Ben, welcome back.
Thank you, Lars. Thank you very much for having me on today.
Let me ask you straight out. Is David Brock Smith, did he help a Chinese communist citizen become the biggest forest landowner in Oregon?
Look, we put out a bunch of memes about David Brock Smith. He said with quotes saying, I helped, we'll just call him China Chin, become the largest landowner in Oregon, and I put tampons in little boys' bathrooms. And, of course, he didn't say those things. But what we're trying to do is bring attention to his abysmal voting record. He's the chairman of the Southern Oregon-China Connection. He's on the board of the Oregon-China Council. And this guy engages with members of the CCP. His donors have ties back to the CCP, ties back to Chin, okay? And so we have all that, all those receipts, and we're like, this guy's voting record in a red district is supporting China's United Nations 2030 agenda, and you can see it all on our website at ruckpack.org.
And I want people to go to Ruckpack and consider what a Ruckpack that you've Ruckpack, I should say. But then the straight ahead question is, you accused Senator David Brock Smith of helping a Chinese communist who we found out, I don't know how we missed this for so long, and I mean by we, I mean everybody missed the fact that a Chinese national who's a wealthy guy and apparently a prominent member of the Chinese Communist Party, and he's not an American, he is the biggest forest landowner in Oregon, maybe in the Northwest, and one of the biggest landowners in the country, apparently. But you said David Brock Smith helped make that happen. Is that true?
He did not help Chin purchase that land back in 2018, 2020. But Chin is
because that was before Brock Smith was in the state legislature, right?
Well, he was in the House, but he wasn't a senator because he was appointed senator. But this whole thing is about the wildfire mapping bill. The wildfire mapping bill that Smith voted yes on is pushing Oregonians out of rural properties, and we see that as communist. In fact, Senator Dennis Linthicum, and this is an actual verbatim quote, Dennis wrote this himself. He said, "You will own nothing and be happy about it." That's what he said.
Was he quoting WEF? Because I quote WEF saying that all the time. Linthicum wasn't saying he endorsed the point of view of the World Economic Forum has famously said, "You'll own nothing and you'll be happy."
Yeah, but Linthicum has his own statement about the wildfire mapping bill saying that that's what this was about. And the same thing happened with the windmill bill. David Brock Smith is saying that he did the windmill bill. He was the chief sponsor to put the windmills in Coos Bay
to
slow it all down. But every Republican senator voted no on the bill. And so the Republican senators said, no, this is terrible. We don't want this. Our constituents don't want this. And David Brock Smith is saying that that he did it to slow it down. But if it was to slow it down, I guarantee you the Republican senators in his district would have voted yes on the bill.
Unless they were uninformed, because, Ben, when I talked to Brock Smith about this, and as I said, I don't really have a dog in the fight on this.
Yeah,
both sides are Republicans. But when he says up to the point where the state passed a law, the decision about whether or not windmills were going to go off the coast of Oregon, which is a stupid idea, and it's already dying on the East Coast, and I think it's going to die for the same reasons here. But having said that up to that point, all the negotiation was between the governor's office, first Kate Brown and now Tina Kotek, and BOEM, which is the federal agency. And the state passed the law to say, you've got to involve the public in this decision-making, and that was the purpose of the bill. Is that the purpose of the bill or not?
Well, the Republican senators certainly disagreed with it. They voted no. And I'll tell you this. We need Republicans in Salem that don't sign on to progressive climate crisis Agenda 2030 bills or even chief sponsor those bills.
No, hold it. Did he sign on to
say no to those bills?
But, Ben, did he sign on to progressive points of view? Or did he said if there's going to be windmills off the coast of Oregon, and apparently I don't like the idea either, as I said, and I think it's going to die for economic reasons, but if all the decision-making is between the governor's office and the federal agency, and you pass a law saying you must involve the public in this, how is that helping out the Chinese?
Because the extraction of lithium is Chinese. That's who's doing it. And they're big on the Agenda 2030. They want the climate crisis.
You're not addressing the question. If the decision-making was between BOEM, which is the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, this crazy energy department policy group, that's part of the U.S. federal government, is negotiating directly with the governor's office, and the legislature, Smith, says you've got to involve the public in this decision. And if you don't, we don't want the windmills, but if we want to involve the public in that, we're going to pass a bill. And that's what they did. How is that helping out?
Here's your answer. I believe Brock Smith is lying. And because the reason I believe that is because if that were true, then the Republican senators would have all voted for the bill. They voted no on the bill.
There are a bunch of dumb votes that Republicans take. I mean, look at it. Right now, the U.S. Congress is debating whether or not to renew FISA without requiring a warrant to spy on Americans. And Republicans are voting on that as well. And I hope they do the right thing. But, there are times other Republicans do the stupid thing. Are you going to stop saying the things that Brock Smith's lawyer has said? You're wrong on these things. You're disparaging him with untrue information. Do you plan to comply with a cease and desist order or letter?
No, when I got the cease and desist, I doubled down because that's just my style. I mean, we know that obviously he didn't say I helped China Chin do this, or I put the tampons in the little boy's bathroom, or I banned your straws. We know he didn't say that. That's obvious. And these are memes, and I think they're pretty obvious when you look at them. They're memes because obviously no politician would say that. But what we're depicting is what he said with his votes. And that's more important than anything else. And voting is speech. And so that's why we're attacking him. I'm personally involved in this fight because I want to see a stronger Republican legislature. I want to see Republicans stand up and say no to their bills and stop voting yes on them. Let the Democrats own their trash. Let them own it. We pick it up and carry it with them. To me, that's insane. I want to see some wins for us in Oregon.
Understood. Ben, you want to tell people where your website is real quick?
Yes, it's rucpac.org, and of course, benettle.com, but RUC PAC, RepPAC.org, and could learn all about it.
Thanks very much, Ben. I appreciate it. Coming up, we got to talk about whether or not the Biden administration is going to be able to sell a bill of goods to the public saying, oh, the economy is doing great. Don't worry about inflation. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Plan of action. Just mug all the Dems.
I got jobbed like 5 weeks ago walking home in New York City. And when I woke up, I genuinely felt like a different person. Because I was on the floor, I was bleeding, I was concussed, and I was 100% Republican.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get you your calls. I want to talk about inflation just a bit. There's some brand new numbers out today, and it is a stunning increase. And in fact, it's being talked down by most of the media, and I'll tell you how they're doing it mathematically. Okay, and then I want to get into some of the things that are said. First, I jumped ahead a little bit. I want you to hear Janet Yellen, who is the Treasury Secretary for Joe Biden, talking about what an amazing economy that we live in right now. Take a listen.
I think we've got a good, strong economy. We've got very strong domestic demand. Consumers are holding up. Some low-income consumers are perhaps exhausting their buffers of saving that they built up during the pandemic. We're seeing a little bit more distress at the household level there.
Oh, so what she's talking about is she's saying, hey, some of those people who had a savings account, they've been trying to pay for all the things they need, and yeah, they're running out of savings. But she talks about it like she's making a laundry list of some kind. You know, oh yeah, they're running out of savings. Well, Janet Yellen, you're the Treasury Secretary. You're also a very wealthy individual, and you pull down a couple of hundred grand a year as Treasury Secretary, and I'm sure your connections give you access to all kinds of money. You don't have to worry that your savings account is about to run dry. But you talk about Americans saying they're perhaps running out, and she uses a bunch of bureaucratic language to say they've run their savings account just about dry. Well, I want to take you back to the summer of 2021, the first year that Joe Biden was in office as president. And what was happening in that summer of 2021, just about 6 or 7 months into Joe Biden? Prices were going up. Gas prices were up dramatically. Diesel was up dramatically. Groceries were up dramatically. And Joe Biden was asked about all that. And he said, oh, it's temporary. It's transitory. This will be over in a while. It's not. And I want to remind you of the history. In the last 20 years or so, the average rate of inflation in America has hovered right just above or just below 2%. So you say, okay, inflation's running at just above or just below 2%. You get a 2% raise, then you're about even. If you get a 2.5% or 3% raise, you're getting ahead. You're money ahead. Well, what's happened since then? On the day he took the oath of office, Joe Biden entered as the White House, as president, inflation was at 1.7%. Now, what has inflation gone to? Well, it went as high as 9%. But Joe would say, well, prices are down since then. There aren't any prices that are down. The rate of inflation is down from a 9% increase at one point to only 3.5%. You say 3.5%, that's not worth even taking a look at. Let me give this comparison. From the day he took office to today, the rate of inflation has doubled. And the rate of inflation over the last 12 months, and this is what most of the media are carrying today with this new report about inflation, which clocked in at 0.4% for the last month. Now, every time I hear a number like that, you know the easy way to turn that into an annual rate? 0.4% times 12 months. And what do you get? 4.8%, just shy of 5%, because that's what I care about. How fast are prices going to increase? Do you know what you get from most of the mainstream media, the legacy media today? They will be happy to tell you what inflation did over the last 12 months. Now, I would ask you, if you're thinking about this for just a moment, has your paycheck gone up by 3.5% in the last year? If it has, You are treading water. You are dead even. You aren't lower. You aren't higher. But you know what has happened? Since Joe Biden took office, prices have risen 19.4%. And I've got the breakdown. Electricity is up 28%. Groceries are up 21%. Rent is up 21%. Now, what has that done to real earnings? Real earnings are, if you got $100 back in 2021 when Joe Biden took office, and you are now getting $100 in wages, and your wages did not go up, but prices went up by 20%, that means you are 20% behind the curve. Now, most Americans are not in that situation. But where they are down in real dollars that they get out of their paycheck. The amount you can buy with those dollars has gone down almost 4%, which means whatever your paycheck was in 2021, whatever it is in 2024, you have 4% less spendable money today or spending power today than you did 3.5 years ago. You say, hold on a second. So I'm living a poorer lifestyle today. Overall prices have gone up 19.4% in 3.5 years. And I would just ask you, how many of you, if you counted up the raise you got, if you got one in 2021 and 22 and 23 and whatever you're expecting to get this year, if you have not had 19% in pay raises since 2021, you are behind the eight ball. And if, say, you had 23% raises over the last 3.5 years, now that'd be a lot. That'd be over 7%, almost 8% a year. How many of you have been getting an 8% raise every year for the last 3 years? I would bet not very many. I know my paycheck has not gone up in the last 3.5 years, not anywhere near what this has, 19.4%. But the number I care about most is not what inflation was over the last 12 months. I'm already realizing that every time I pull up to the pump to fill up my tank with gas, every time I go to the grocery store with Tina to buy groceries, I don't care what inflation was. What I care about is where it's going. Now, the media is telling you inflation increased between March of last year and March of this year by 3.5%. But the most recent number is 0.4%, which is nearly a 5% rate of inflation if it continues at that level. And you say, Lars, you're being a cynic, you're being a pessimist. Maybe it'll go down. Maybe it'll go down to 0.3 next month or 0.2 in July. It might. It might go up, too. It might go to 0.5% next month. What I care about is what inflation is going to do to me in the next 12 months, not what it's already done to me in the last 12 months. And just since Joe Biden took office, let me give you a couple of examples. Gasoline is up 47.8%. Eggs are up 49%. And by the way, the eggs are both energy-related, labor-related, and also regulation. Peanut butter's up 40%. Crackers are up 38%. Salad dressing's up 30%. Baby food is up 30%. Sugar is up 29%. So you've got all these examples. Coffee, which is a staple of life, as far as I'm concerned, is one of the lower inflation numbers, 19.6%. But milk, for those of you who have kids, or in my case, a granddaughter, up 15% in the last 3 years. And if your paycheck has not done the same, then you are running behind the curve instead of being ahead of the curve. And yet you've got Janet Yellen and Kamala Harris and Joe Biden and everybody else on the Biden team, including Pete Buttigieg and others, saying the economy is fine. Everything's going great. Don't worry. Bidenomics is working great and working out well for the American public. If you believe that, go ahead and vote for the guy for another 4 years. If you don't believe that, you're going to have to cast a vote for Donald John Trump. Back in a moment. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Lars wants a job for any American who wants one, with one exception.
It's time to tell Crooked Joe Biden, you're fired.
This is the Lars Larson Show. You've seen him on News Nation.
He is the worst president we have ever seen, period.
Now, hear him with Lars.
Politics and media has become like a form of silly sports fanaticism instead of the serious work of improving society.
This is the Chris Cuomo Perspective on the Lars Larson Show.
Okay. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And my number one naysayer in America is Chris Cuomo from News Nation, who joins me now. Hey, Chris, I'm glad we're going to make this a regular thing because it's great to have a liberal naysayer on my program.
I am not a liberal and not a naysayer, but otherwise it's good to hear you, Lars.
Well, I mean, are you a liberal, a conservative? Are you sitting on the fence? We've talked about this a bit before, but doesn't it make more sense to stake out a position of one kind or another?
No, I think progressive pragmatism is how you should be, the way you are in every other part of your life, that you should look for reasonable solutions. You should be open to things beyond your own perception. That's how you live the rest of your life, right? Otherwise, you're hard to be around, hard to employ, and tough to live with.
Is liberal pragmatism how we got to, what is it, as of March, an annual rate of inflation close to 5%? Is that liberal pragmatism?
As long as you take out the Trump administration's tax cuts and all this early spending he did on the pandemic, you know, inflation has been building up for a while, and it has a lot of different reasons for it, some of which is controlled some by U.S. policy, some of which isn't. But that's way too complicated, and people don't have time for that. And they're being force-fed fringy ideas and outrage. So people are beyond explanations once it gets to tribal thinking, and that's what we need to counteract.
Okay, and I know your argument about tribal thinking, but tell me this, Chris. You're saying it's been building up for a while. Why did that inflation run at an average of 1.9% for 4 years under Trump? It was 1.7 the day that Joe Biden became president of the United States, and now we are running at an annual rate as of March of about 5. So how is it that all this pent-up inflation was created by Donald Trump but only chose to exhibit itself during the presidency of slow Joe Biden?
I must question the premise. I didn't say it's all built up under Trump, and you shouldn't either, because that's not accurate. It's been happening for a while based on U.S. monetary policy. And the Trump administration cannot be an article of convenience for conservatives. You can't just look at what happened before the pandemic and then once it started to settle down. You got to own the pandemic as well. Trump was on watch, and he absolutely exacerbated the situation by pretending it wasn't happening. And then they threw a ton of money at it that Biden absolutely continued. And without question, you can't find an economist who doesn't say it wasn't the primary catalyst for inflation. And is it on its way back down? Yeah. Is it where we need it to be? No, but it's not the most troubling indicator about our economy. The most troubling indicator are what we see in terms of growth of which job sectors and what it means for this generation and the next generation of workers.
By the way, I'm talking to Chris Cuomo from News Nation. You can catch his show Wednesdays, 8 p.m., 7 p.m. Central. But Chris, how can you simultaneously say Donald Trump pretended the pandemic wasn't happening, but threw a ton of money at it? Aren't those a bit inconsistent?
No, they go along with chronology. And you know this, Lars. What happened in the beginning? Just going to have a few cases. Just going to be a few dozen cases. It's just going to be like the cold. It'll be over in a few weeks. Remember
Is that what
right?
Fauci was feeding him at that point, the supposed experts who sold us out to communist China?
I think it was a lot of people feeding him because they were in an emergency situation that they didn't understand. And I think that Trump, you know, you're the man at the top, right? If Kennedy had just listened to everybody around him, we would have gone to war with Russia and Cuba, right? So the leader's got to lead. Ultimately, the buck stops with him, as the expression goes. Did he get some wrong information? 100%. Why? Because they had never dealt with anything like it before.
I think
and they made mistakes.
Chris, I'm going to throw something at you, and you feel free to tell me my tinfoil hat is too tight. Fauci knew that he had signed off on millions of dollars of gain-of-function research, the kind of research that was so dangerous, even Barack Hussein Obama banned it in America. So Fauci and his cronies took it overseas, and Fauci knew that he had blood on his hands, so he lied to Trump and tried to minimize, oh, it's not going to be a big deal, because he wasn't looking out for America. He was looking out for Tony Fauci, because Tony Fauci knew he'd allowed something to be done. Would you ever be in favor of having American taxpayer money spent on gain-of-function research that creates dangerous viruses out of not dangerous viruses, and then do the research not in America where it's too dangerous, but in a Chinese communist lab in Wuhan?
The way you put it, absolutely not. I think
is there a better way to spin it?
Yes, which is to not spin it and not to create a boogeyman out of gain-of-function research. There's a reason it's done by so many different countries. Now,
I'm going to ask you about that next, Chris.
Well, a lot of different countries do it. Why? Because you want to test what different properties of viruses and other organisms are capable of so that you can get ahead of it, of what might be happening with it. Now, there's a difference between that and weaponizing viruses, which we still don't know that Tony Fauci or anyone else connected to America was doing gain-of-function research that led to COVID-19. That has never been proven, even out of Comer's mouth. He can say it. He's never shown it. And Tony Fauci, you saw his testimony. It has not been rebutted. Now, you can play with what Tony said.
Well, hold on, Chris. I can rebut it right now. Chris,
go ahead.
Okay, let me try this on you. If I show you how to make a bomb, and you now learn how to make a bomb, think of that virus as a bomb, and then you go out and take that knowledge that I've given you and you make a bomb. And when people come to me and say, Lars, you taught Chris how to make that bomb. And I say, I didn't teach him how to make that bomb. I just told him how to make a bomb. He went out and made that bomb. So I don't have to take responsibility for the fact that I taught him how to make a bomb. And then he went out and made that bomb that killed people. Do you see how thin that excuse is? You say, I didn't teach them how to make that virus. I just told them how to do gain of function on some viruses.
Yes. And I just, again, don't think that's what's being said. I think if that were what it is, then you have a problem. I think that you still have a problem because you had COVID-19 that may have well been developed. And if people were as curious about not playing gotcha and just attacking the left, and somehow Fauci has become a lefty in your guys' mind, that we'd be better off if you were just to direct that outrage at China, because they have stopped us from investigating where it came from. And Trump and his entire administration wound up being okay with that.
I'm mad at China.
He just wound up being okay with that.
I wish
he just gave China a pass.
No, but by the time Biden came in, we knew it was China. We knew it wasn't the wet market.
Oh, we knew before.
Why didn't Joe Biden, in all these talks he's had with Xi, demand an explanation and demand that they set this right?
Because he failed. And so did Trump. And Trump failed first. And again, I don't think it's a competition, because I think all of this is reductive, to be honest. At the end of the day, we're fighting these, to me, a useless battle about which one of these two guys was worse. We still don't know where the virus came from. We don't know if it came from the lab. We don't know what else they have. We did not put together a 9/11 commission to figure out what was done right and wrong during the pandemic for the next time, because nobody really cares about these things, Lars. No disrespect. But I think it's way, for partisans, it's way more about playing gotcha and advantage and showing the other side is worse than
Chris,
it is creating progress.
My audience tells me they care about this a lot, and I care about it a lot. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking to Chris Cuomo. Chris is now on News Nation. You can find his show Wednesday nights, 8 p.m., 7 p.m. Central, and, of course, 6 p.m. out here on the Left Coast. Hey, you're listening to the Lars Larson Show, and I always have fun talking to my liberal friend Chris Cuomo, the ultimate naysayer. Now, if you want to hear the entire interview, you can check out the download at LarsLarson.com. You can also find me on Instagram and other social media. Glad to have you with me, and always glad to take your emails. Talk@LarsLarson.com.
Introducing the Greek god of lousy economics, open borders, and falling upstairs.
I am Joe Bidenopoulos.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Wednesday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and it's always my pleasure to be with you. We endeavor to serve the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk on a daily basis. And this segment of the show is brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showings, no hassles. You pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. I do want to mention one email about having Chris Cuomo on, and I've had a few people say, why the heck are you giving that liberal Chris Cuomo time on the air? Well, Todd wrote in and said, the greatest lie the devil ever told was that Chris Cuomo is not a liberal. Good debate. The whole point of having naysayers go to the head of the line is to hear what the other side has to say and then see whether or not their arguments stand up under a little bit of scrutiny from me. Now, if you don't want to hear that, I'm sorry. That's what I've decided to present. I'll give you my point of view. I'll let you explain your point of view. And if a naysayer says, Lars, you are completely wrong about all of this, I'd be glad to hear them tell me. Kevin is a naysayer. Kevin, welcome to the program. We honor naysayers here. What is it that you and I disagree about that makes you a naysayer today?
Well, I disagree that we are not necessarily in a huge percentage of gains versus an inflation.
Well, hold on. Percentage of gains. I don't know what you're talking about, Kevin. Are you saying we're not seeing inflation?
Well, we're seeing huge inflation.
Yes.
Exactly.
Agreed.
But it was
so
held,
what do we disagree about?
Well, we disagree about fuel costs and this driving inflation, and also the fact that home values have risen so much.
We disagree. Hold on. How do we disagree about fuel costs? Tell me that, because I'm not. What are you telling me? Fuel costs aren't up 50%?
Oh, they're up way more than that.
Okay, then what do we disagree about, Kevin, that makes you a naysayer?
Well, at one time in 2020, oil was at minus -$36 a barrel.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Okay.
That was
now,
before
now
Joe Biden.
It is around eight. Right now, it is around $80.
Yep.
So that
true.
Is much higher inflation. Okay.
Thank you,
now,
Captain Obvious. But what do we disagree about, Kevin? I mean, oil is up, and Joe Biden declared war on the oil companies and said he was planning to put them out of business. And it appears he's done everything he can to make that happen. And as a result, America's a major producer of oil.
We're the number one producer of oil still. 14.7% of all oil produced in our country.
We're still not. You're still not telling me what we disagree about, Kevin.
Well, we disagree that Joe Biden has caused these high oil prices.
Okay, you make your case for how he has it, and I'll tell you why he has, and I'd like to hear your input. Which do you want to do first?
Well, we've actually have more. We produce more oil than any other country.
We produce
we
more. Kevin,
yep.
You're going to state these are Democrat talking points. Let me tell you why.
What?
No, hold on.
Okay.
Kevin, when Joe Biden came in, he said, I'm canceling a pipeline. I'm canceling federal leases where most new oil is found. So what has happened when oil goes to $80 a barrel? Everybody who already has a well is pumping out of that well as fast as they can because prices are huge. It's $80 a barrel. That's what we're producing. But do you know how we keep producing that? We drill new holes for new oil. If we don't bring new oil into the marketplace, you may be okay for right now. It'd be like a guy who runs a store who says, I'm not ordering any more supplies for my store. I'm just selling everything in the store right now because prices are high. You say, well, what are you going to do when the store runs dry? This is not my problem because it won't be Joe Biden's problem. He won't be president in January. So he said, we're going to pump all the oil we can. Of course, anybody who's got a well is selling as fast as they can, but we're not going to let people drill any new oil wells.
There are new wells being drilled. There have been new sales.
There are a few being drilled. But why do you think, then if you think that's the case, why did Joe Biden cancel new federal leasing on federal lands, which is where most of the oil is discovered? Why did he do that?
He opened up new in 2020.
No, why did he cancel the leasing on federal lands if the goal wasn't to run this country dry?
Well, he's reopened some of those.
Some, a few, but not as many. Kevin, he hasn't opened up.
I explained to you that I agree that there is a position that you are taking that does not affect oil prices of right now.
Well, not right now.
You are predicting a future out of 20 or 30 years.
No, not 20 or 30. Kevin, did you The State of the Union address that Joe Biden delivered 2 years ago, he said in 10 years, we won't even need oil anymore. Do you believe that's true?
True. So why wouldn't prices be less now?
No, because
if you're not going to need it.
Kevin, if you're an oil company and the president of the United States, who has the power of the regulatory, he also has power over Wall Street and the banks,
right,
and he says there won't be, No, listen for a second. There won't be an oil business in 10 years. Are you going to invest dime one in trying to develop new resources or new refineries when the president has promised to put you out of business by the end of a decade?
Well, absolutely not. But
right, which means when you start to cut off the supply, when you cancel federal oil leases, when you cancel the Keystone XL pipeline, when you say, don't bother to invest in your business, I'm putting you out of that business within a decade, yes, you're going to pump like crazy right now, and then it's all going to dry up. And in the meantime, prices are going to be high. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
The Lars.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Look, if you hate cops just because of the cops, the next time you get in trouble, call it crackhead.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Wednesday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and it's my pleasure to be with you. If you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day, and your calls are welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer and you've got the guts, then call up. We'll put you to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. One little personal confession. I can't dance to save my life. I'll do it, I guess, only if forced to do it. I mean, if my granddaughter, who's 8, said, hey, Grandpa, we got to go dance. I'll make a good show of it, but that's about it. But I do admire those people who can do line dancing. So when I saw this story that Ari Hoffman managed to get an exclusive on, the borderline dance team that was supposed to perform at the Emerald City Hoedown in Seattle on Saturday, but I want Ari to tell the rest of the story. They didn't show up, and there was a good reason for them to say, we're not going, right?
Yeah, and first of all, I learned so much from the story, Lars, because I didn't know we had an Emerald City Hoedown. I didn't know this was a thing. I learned a whole bunch from this. But the borderline dance team, they were scheduled to perform at this thing on Saturday. Now, the team, if you look at their website, if you look at anything about them, and if you look at the website that was advertising them, that runs this whole festival, they put up the pictures of them in their outfits, which are red, white, and blue themed. So this shouldn't have been a surprise to anybody, but apparently they were told that some of the convention goers associated with the situation in Palestine and the trans community said they felt triggered and unsafe by the team's American flag themed outfits.
Now,
according to the team. Yeah, go ahead, Lars.
Yeah, I'm talking to Ari Hoffman, whose talk show is on our Seattle affiliate KVI. He follows me. I'm the warm-up act, but this is where they're starting to say the quiet part out loud. I mean, to me, you can say, I disagree with what my country's doing, what my state is doing, what my city is doing. We can disagree all day long. But when you say, I am triggered, that is, I'm somehow verklempt or something, because at the sight of an American flag, you know, I would say, well, there's the door. You can leave anytime you want. And I don't think that's an un-American point of view. All points of view are welcome. But when you say, I'm not going to go to an event that features American flags because American flags set me off, then what the heck are you doing in America?
Exactly. I mean, what, if they had been wearing trans flags, they would have been allowed to dance. If they were wearing Hamas flags, they would have been allowed to dance. It's absolutely crazy. Now, there's another team called the West Coast Country Heat. They were also wearing red, white, and blue things. Now, both teams were giving an ultimatum. You can remove the flag tops and performance street clothes, which most of the group didn't have because they had traveled in their uniforms to this event, or they could be provided with shirts from previous years or not to perform at all, and both these teams said, okay, then we're not performing. The Rain Country Dance Association that runs this whole thing is a nonprofit LGBTQ plus dance organization. And what's fascinating is the original dance troupe, who is the borderline dance team, they put up a post about how this was so disappointing to them because this is a group that claims to be so inclusionary, so yep, accepting, and celebrating of diversity, and this was the complete opposite.
And yet, this is anti-American. It's not saying we disagree on some issue involving gay or lesbian or transgender people in America. You can have disagreements on that. These folks are being openly anti-American. And if, as you say, if you come out saying, we want to be inclusive, you know, and we're worried we've got an acronym for gays and lesbians now that's, you know, 10 letters long, LGBTQ, two spirit, blah-de-blah, blah, plus this, that, and the other thing. They're trying to incorporate every one of these sexual minorities, I guess would be the best way to describe them, and say, we want to be inclusive, except we hate America. And we don't want any symbols of America in an American event in a city like Seattle. That doesn't make sense, does it?
No, of course not. My friend likes to tell a story. He told this to me a couple of years ago, but he's walking down the street near our synagogue, and there's a public school near our synagogue. And his son said, look, Daddy, they have the American flag, the Washington flag, and the Seattle flag. And my friend looks up and realizes that's not the Seattle flag, but a little six-year-old may think that the LGBTQIA flag is the Seattle flag because it's everywhere you go in Seattle. But I wonder why this troop was invited in the first place. This shouldn't have been a surprise to them. Maybe they were trying to be inclusive. Maybe it's just a small group of people who did this. But at the end of the day, you know what you're getting. You put it up on the website. Plus, you should know when you're dealing with a bunch of far left people, they're going to pull something like this. So I think this thing was botched from the beginning to the end. And when I reached out to the group that runs this thing, they said, well, we celebrate inclusivity. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, no, you really don't, because you got rid of people who have an American flag. And that American flag represents people who fought for you to have all the rights you have, who fought for all this inclusivity for that you guys claim to cherish that you don't.
You know, and the thing I'd love, because I know, Ari, everybody, I get a lot of emails from people saying, well, get those people on and ask them. And I say, I'd love to. They won't come on and ask. But I would ask them, out of all the countries on planet Earth, how many countries would accept any of your members who came in and said, hey, we want to come in and we're doing an LGBTQ presentation of some kind, dance, singing, whatever it is. And you say, out of roughly 200 countries on the planet, how many would you be welcomed in? And I would guess that the number is probably a couple of dozen. And the rest of the countries, I can't cite them all today, but if you went to Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, and said, hey, we're a gay dance troupe. No, you're not even getting off the plane. I'm a Christian. No, you're not getting off the plane, not if you have a cross or a Bible. I'm Jewish. I'm wearing a kippah. No, you're not getting off the plane. There are a ton of countries on this planet that wouldn't let these people in the front door, or if they did, in many of those countries, they get tossed off a building or beaten to death. And they're living in the most, you know, freedom and liberty allowing or protecting country in the world. And then they're complaining, saying, we don't want symbols of that country here. If you don't like the liberties here, see what kind of liberties you get in a Muslim majority country, because you're not going to get them. And that's 58 or 60 countries on the planet's surface. How do you suppose they'd answer a question like that? Because I can't ask them.
They'd have no idea, but odds are they'd be wearing a T-shirt that says Queers for Palestine and not realize that if they went into Gaza, they'd be thrown off the closest roof if there were any roofs left in Gaza anymore.
No, and they just don't seem to understand, if you want to talk inclusivity, then be inclusive yourself. And if you want to be a full-on hypocrite, then do what you're doing right now. And I hope that their event suffers as a result. It's the only way the marketplace can send a message. If you've decided that you're going to be this kind of group that kicks people out for displaying the flag of the country that you're in and honoring all Americans, because that flag, Ari, as you said, people fought for it. People fought to preserve the liberties, the God-given liberties we have here. If you've decided you don't like that, try it somewhere else and see how it works there. That's Ari Hoffman. His show on our Seattle affiliate follows mine. Glad to have you with me on a Wednesday. Always glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And coming up, do you realize that in at least a few American states, Joe Biden will not be on the general election ballot in November at all? We'll talk about that next.
Sayers go to the head of the line at the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Do you believe this? Joe Biden may not end up on the general election ballot in at least two states and possibly other states as well. And why? Because the Democrats have chosen to hold their national convention in which they nominate Joe Biden as their candidate for president. And they've chosen to hold the convention so late in the game that they are going to miss the deadlines for being able to certify Joe Biden as a candidate. So this is happening in Ohio. He may not be on the Ohio general election ballot. Maybe they'll have to do him as a write-in. Maybe this is deliberate on the part of Democrats saying, we don't really want Joe anyway, but we can't figure out another way to get rid of him. But here's the problem. The deadline in Ohio to certify the candidate to appear on the general election ballot is August the 12th. The deadline or the beginning of the Democrat National Convention, I'm sorry, it's the 14th, not the 12th. August 19th is when the Democrat National Convention begins. It runs for several days. And at the end of that, about the 21st or 22nd, is when they nominate Joe Biden as the Democrat candidate. I know he's not much to write home about. He has to have everything scripted out for him these days. He's almost gone mentally. But it shows that the Ohio Secretary of State has already said, he sent a letter to the Ohio Democrat Chair Liz Walters on April the 5th and said, look, you're going to be too late to make the deadline to put your candidate on the ballot. So Joe Biden may not appear on the ballot. And now Alabama has issued the same kind of warning, that Alabama has August 15th as the certification deadline. That's 4 days before the Democrats even start their convention. And as you know, they're going to nominate Joe Biden at the end of their convention several days later. But the deadline is about a week earlier than they're going to nominate him. So they're going to miss the deadline. He may not show up on the ballot in Alabama. Now, some people will say, well, a bunch of deadlines were missed in 2020. And that's true. And why? Because both the conventions were held very late in the year, very late in the summer in 2020, because of something that was going on that year called the pandemic. Now, at this point, I wonder what they're going to do. The Biden campaign says he will be on the ballot in all 50 states, even though they're going to miss the deadlines. Joe Biden is late for just about everything, and now he's even late to be placed on the general election ballot for November. Let's go to Ron in Tacoma. Hey, Ron, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Oh, I wanted to help out Como when he was on your show there. He didn't seem to understand where COVID-19 and all that came from.
No, he didn't.
Maybe after a year. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. You know, April 3rd, 2024, one of the biggest producers of eggs in the United States had to destroy over almost 2 million chickens. That's like within the last week and a half.
Because of the avian flu, they're using that as the reason or excuse, depending on who you believe, right?
Absolutely. And then, So I did some digging, and I found out in February 15th that the WCW exposed the USDEA just a month and a half ago, experimenting with bird flu gain of function on experiments in a Wuhan lab. So, gee, I think I have an idea who might be responsible for this.
Yeah, I think so too, Ron. And here's the thing. One of these days, probably soon, maybe even next week, because Cuomo and I talk about once a week. We're not fast friends or anything like that, but I love having the ultimate naysayer on. He said in the interview that we did, he said that he believes that there's a point to gain-of-function research. I think there is no point to gain-of-function research, and I've been saying that since we first became acquainted with the whole idea back in 2020. Because, you know, I've heard doctors, I've even asked some serious medical doctors that I know on the air, I've said, why should we go out and take diseases that are not dangerous today or are not dangerous to humans today and turn them into diseases that are dangerous? And their argument is, well, we have to create the dangerous diseases so we'll know how to defend against the dangerous diseases. I said, but you're creating the danger, and then you're figuring out how to meet a danger that Mother Nature did not produce, and that without humans getting involved with gain of function might never exist. Why don't you go out and solve every other disease problem that we already have right now, no matter what the disease is? And once you're done doing all that, maybe at that point you need to go out and invent new diseases to combat. But Ron, there's a reason that even somebody like Barack Obama would say this stuff is too dangerous to do, so he forbade it in the United States. But as far as I can tell, while I'll blame Obama for every bad thing that he ever did, there's nothing that indicates that Obama said it's too dangerous to do it here, so why don't we go do it in the Chinese communist lab and put it under the auspices of a government that would like to wipe out the United States as an economic and military power. Why in the world would anybody think that was a good idea?
Yeah. I'm with you, Lars. I don't know how any of this is a good idea, and I think it needs to be ceased and desist immediately.
Yeah, I mean, there's enough dangerous things that are being done in medical research. There are also good things that are being done. But when you say, I'm going to figure out new ways for people to die, and then we'll figure out ways to protect you from the new ways to die that we've invented, no sense to that at all. Let's go to Chief in Eugene. Hey, Chief, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, I just want to say, you know, I live in a very liberal town, and something
no kidding
totally resonated with me. I'm all the wrong things. I'm a straight, white male who believes in Jesus Christ, and, you know, living in this town, I feel a bit of discrimination coming my way when I get into conversation. And when you said, if you want to talk about inclusivity, you have to be inclusive, it really kind of hit me, you know, right in the heart, and I wanted to thank you for saying that, because that, you know, you're one of the only people that I listen to that actually knows that that's how you include other people, by accepting their point of view that disagrees with yours.
Well, and thank you for that, Chief. By the way, one of the things I always like to point out is this. When the people who founded this country founded it, there were people in this country, or what would become the United States, who believed they wanted a theocracy. Virginia even tried it. They said, we're going to have a state where you can only run for office if you're a Christian, etc. And the founders, all of them Christians, were I think, to be congratulated among all the other things they did for us, because they said, we will not have a theocracy. Even though, do you think, Chief, if we could go back to that age and say to Jefferson and Madison and Franklin and Washington, hey, would you like to have a country that's all Christians, or at least run by Christians? They rejected the idea because they understood, I think, kind of like that Martin Niemöller quote that I always use, where the guy says, when they came for the socialist workers, I didn't object because I wasn't one of those. And when they came for this group, I didn't object. And when they finally came for me, there was nobody left to object. The Christians who founded this country understood you had to have a country that would welcome all faiths and protect everybody's faith and protect everybody's free speech rights that they got from God. And if you say, well, we're just going to exclude the bad faiths, you know, we'll exclude this group or that group, they understood. Because they had a history in England where the Church of England said, we are the only church and you can't follow any other religion. And they even, that's why I don't like the King James Bible, because King James and the government of England were evil when it comes to that. If you say you want to be inclusive, you got to be inclusive of all. The founders of the United States understood that. The LGBTQ crowd, especially this bunch in Seattle, does not understand that. And you've got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Exercising the right to free speech every day. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Wednesday. Always glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Now, I staked out my position pretty firmly on a case out of Michigan in which two parents were convicted and sentenced to prison for involuntary manslaughter for their role in a shooting at Oxford High School that was actually committed by their 15-year-old son, Ethan Crumbly. He shot and killed four students. He injured seven others, and he was charged with a whole raft of offenses. And I said, I think their conviction was appropriate and right. I think being sentenced to prison was right as well. I take it that Mike Hammond might disagree with me, but that's okay. I want you to hear both sides. Mike is senior legal counsel for Gun Owners of America, which is a great group. Mike, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Lars, thanks for having me on. Hello, America.
Yeah, well, tell me this, though. You don't believe that the Crumblies, that the mother and father, James and Jennifer Crumbly, should have been convicted. The audience has heard my argument why, and we can talk about that. Tell me why you think their conviction was wrong.
Well, I think there are, to begin with, the FBI has found that 1.2 million times a year, individuals, that is, law-abiding individuals, use firearms in order to prevent crime. In virtually no case are they required to fire the firearm. In virtually every case, they simply brandish the firearm, hold the intruder until the police arrive, and all untoward consequences are avoided. This is a beginning of an effort in a number of states, and I've seen in places like Washington State and states like that. This is the beginning of an effort to dissuade people from exercising their most fundamental Second Amendment rights, and that is to keep a firearm in the home in order to protect themselves and their families.
Well, I think you may be right about that, Mike, and you and I agree on that. I cite those stats all the time, the DOJ study that says at least 1.2 million times a year people use a gun to protect themselves from a criminal. They usually stop the criminal without shooting him, without firing the gun, often by just brandishing. All of those are familiar to my audience. But tell me this. I own guns. I take the responsibility seriously. It's not even like owning power tools. It's the kind of thing where you, if you decide to be a gun owner, you should take it seriously. And you should make sure that only people who have access to those guns are people that are trusted. These parents said, let's buy a pistol for a 15-year-old son. I've told people that I bought my granddaughter her first rifle on the day she was born. I mean, she couldn't even hold it, and she hasn't held it yet. But I also don't give her unfettered access to it. And if I ever heard from the school, by the way, your granddaughter's acting strange and saying things that might lead us to believe they're going to commit some kind of violent crime, if I thought, well, she does have access to that gun, let's make sure we know where it is. These people didn't do any of that.
Well, a lot of kids act strange, and as a matter of fact, a lot of the strangeness is caused by the psychotropic drugs administered when the parents take the kids to psychiatrists rather than basically train them themselves.
Well, and you and I agree on that as well, although I don't know whether there's any evidence that Ethan Crumbly was on those drugs.
Yes,
and there are a bunch
evidence. The first thing that his father did was administer a pill when he found out that, and I won't say his name, although I could, when he found out that his kid was having psychological problems. The first thing he did was administer a pill.
So these are foolish parents then, and I agree with that. But if they bought him a gun, allowed him access to it, and then were called to the school. And even if, I mean, look, Mike, I would rather be warned of something that turns out to be, you know, somebody's warning me, Lars, you better check the right rear tire on your car. So I check it, and it's fine. Yeah. I'd rather be warned than have somebody say, looks like there's something wrong with Lars's tire, and then I get on the freeway and the tire blows out. I'd rather have the warning and have it be false. In this case, they were warned, hey, something's going on.
Well,
and they didn't say, well, we better make sure we know where that gun is because he might have it with him. And as it turns out in this case, he did.
Yeah, if your flat tire basically would protect your life, I think it would be an adequate analogy, but in this case, as I say, there are one, and as you admit, there are 1 point, you use the term two. I think the FBI said there were 1.5 million uses of firearms a year in which, in order to avoid crime in which a gun was never fired.
But this was not a self-defense. This was where the parents put the gun in the hands of a kid who clearly had major problems. And apparently, as you said, they knew he had major problems. And then when the school said he's acting in a way that might lead us to believe he's going to do something violent, it turns out their warning was accurate. The parents didn't act on it legally. As senior legal counsel, if I'm warned about some danger, and I ignore the warning, and then people get hurt, do I have any responsibility legally?
Well, if you are warned of the danger that firearms are evil,
but Mike, not firearms in general. Yeah. If you're warned about this specific kid in this specific school that there may be a problem, wouldn't the first thing you do? I mean, I know for a fact, I can stand here right now, Mike, and say I have one pistol on my hip and every other gun I own is locked up in a safe. And I know that. But if somebody said to me, hey, Lars, looks like you left your safe open and there are guns in there. And I said, oh, it'll be fine. Nobody's going to mess with them. And then a child gets a hold of the gun. But I had warning that there was a possible danger and I didn't act. Do I have any legal responsibility?
Well, let me tell you about my brother. He woke up in the middle of the night in a dangerous area of Kansas City where a drug addict was standing over his bed. He took the gun, which fortunately was unsecured, not locked up.
I agree.
And available to him, and stood the guy down until police arrived. They arrived probably about two hours later. If he had not had that unlocked gun, if the gun had been in a gun safe or squirreled away somewhere, my opinion is my brother would have been dead.
And I agree with you there, Mike. I always have a gun within reach at all hours of the day. But I also make sure that
if it's locked up, it doesn't do
anything. Everyone but one. The one that's with me all the time and the rest are in the safe. If you gave a gun to a teenage boy, and they did, they gave the gun to him, said this is a gift, and then they went to the range with him, which is all perfectly good, legitimate stuff. But then the school says, hey, something strange is going on. Mike, wouldn't your first action be to say, let's make sure that gun is safe and locked up and not at the school? Because as a 15-year-old, he had absolutely no legal authority in any state to walk around carrying a gun. And he certainly didn't have a right to have one on school property, did he?
Well, the 18 U.S.C. 922 X circumscribes those cases in which a person under 15 years of age can go around carrying a gun. But I guess my response to this would be that this is one case out of 1.5 million, and the anti-gunners are trying to use this case in order to affect the conduct, that is, the willingness to keep a gun for self-defense, on everyone else.
And legally, and I understand what you think, and you're right, they're going to try to do that, but in this case, the minute he walked on school property, the minute he carried that gun concealed, in his state and in every state, he was breaking the law. He was not a legal, lawful gun owner. Mike, thanks for the call.
broadcasting the sound of freedom. Here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I want to get right to your calls, but I have to tell you, this segment is brought to you by the home power generating folks at ProTech Power. Make sure your loved ones are safe. When the power goes out, I do it for my family. Call 541-ONAGEN. That's 541-ONAGEN. The poll on X today. Should America exempt black citizens from paying income taxes as a form of reparations? My answer is no. And if you say, who's got that crazy idea? Well, it would be a Democrat, of course. Democrat freshman Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett from Texas is calling for black Americans to be exempt from paying taxes as a form of reparations, although she later admitted in the interview the plan may not work because many black people aren't paying taxes in the first place. And that's coming from Jasmine Crockett in Texas, who is a black American herself. So you can find the question, the poll on X, at Lars Larson Show. And it's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Let's go to Rob. Hey, Rob, thanks for listening on the Radio Network, Radio Northwest Network and KPNW. What's on your mind?
Hey, a long-time listener, Lars. Don't always agree with you, but I definitely like your show. So,
thank you.
Yeah, hey, General Flynn, Roger Stone, Paul Manafort, most of the January Sixers, now Jennifer and James Crumbly, and most of all, Donald Trump, are all being treated with a different standard than how about all the Black Lives Matter folks that were burning down cities in this country, including Portland. Where's the FBI? Where's the Justice Department going after these people? It's all selective prosecution. And I think this country sees it, is sick of it, and is terrified that it's coming to a neighborhood to them sooner than later if we don't reelect Donald Trump.
I mean, Rob, I agree with you on electing Trump. I agree with you on the J6ers. There is a different standard, and I think the comparison between Antifa and BLM and their riots that caused 36 murders, literally, caused $3 billion damage, burning, rioting, looting, etc., and almost no punishment for any of them, and major league punishment for the J6ers. But can you tell me how the Crumblies were treated under a different standard? Because you've lumped one in with the other. I want to know where you see the connection.
Well, I certainly feel for the families that lost their children, and growing up here in Springfield, you know, we had the Kip Kinkle incident and all of that, and I worked at the hospital when that happened, so I was pretty familiar with the whole process.
I was a reporter who went down every single night for 2 weeks after that shooting. I was, too. But in that case, yeah, you can't exactly punish Kinkle's parents because they ended up dead because their son murdered him. But
It's just the double standard.
Rob, you haven't pointed to what the double standard is. If these parents, they were legally entitled to buy a pistol, they did. They were legally entitled to give it to their son as a gift, and they did. He was not legally entitled to take it to school. He was not legally entitled to shoot people with it. He was not a lawful gun owner. So compared to what the lawyer was telling me earlier, so he was not a legal gun owner or possessor because he had no right to possess. Hold on. He had no right to.
I don't agree with what Crumbly did. I understand you don't, but I
want to get to the essential question. The essential question is this.
I've never told you that before.
What's that?
I said, how do you know that I don't like guns? I've never told you that before.
I didn't say that. I didn't say you didn't like guns.
I just said I don't like guns, and you said, well, I know you don't.
Oh, okay. I thought you said something else. So tell me this. When the parents are alerted, your son is acting strange, we're afraid he might do something violent, and you realize that within the last couple of weeks you've bought him a gun, you've taken him to the range, and he might have the gun, wouldn't your first instinct be, number one, we should talk to our son. Number two, we should search his backpack, which they could do legally and the school could do legally. Number three, maybe we should share with the school, and maybe they didn't want to share with the school. We just bought him a gun a short time ago. But
I'm all for this kid going to prison and his parents going to prison too. What I'm not for is the double standard.
But
where's
you haven't
the FBI
pointed
and the Justice Department going after all the Black Lives Matter people in Portland, or all the stuff that we watched for a year and a half on TV.
Who committed a different bunch of crimes, right?
Well, okay, so you can lump
well,
it into
so
a
I, look, I look, I can point out a double standard. If you say this group goes out and protests the J6ers and they get maximum punishment, Antifa goes out and protests, gets no punishment, and their protests involved 36 murders, $3 billion in damage. What was done on Capitol Hill pales by comparison. There's a double standard. Where is the double standard with James and Jennifer Crumbly?
It's just in the process. It has nothing to do with the fact that they had that he had a gun and they allowed him to have it. It's a double standard.
Did they have any? Hold on, hold on. Since
are we really
going to? You've said double standard about 50 times. I want to ask you a question. Did those parents have any responsibility to say to themselves, "We've been alerted our son may be dangerous," and he was. It turns out. We need to go and locate that gun and make sure it's not in his bag. Did they have any responsibility?
Yes, and they should go to prison, but so should all the parents who let their kids go and do all of these things, and then they're aware of what their Facebook and their Snapchat and all their other social media platforms are all about. Some parents even encourage their children to be violent.
I know. And then sadly they do. And when their kids are violent, then maybe they should pay the consequences as well. Rob, thanks for the call. Good naysayer. You got the Lars Larson Show on the Radio Northwest Network. The Lars